Good morning and welcome to Backchat. I'm Hugh Chewerton. Your co-host today is Alex Lowe from the South China Morning Post. Alex, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning to you too.
To pocket or not to pocket? That's the big question in politics at the moment and what we're going to be talking about for the next 45 minutes or so. At the weekend, the chief executive, the chief secretary, the president of LegCo and the convener of the executive council all spoke with different emphases, but they were united in calling on PAN Democrats to vote in support of the reform package, any reform package based on the NPCSC decision. But the public are less sure. The latest poll commissioned by the South China Morning Post suggests slightly more people agree with the PAN Democrats than support the package, a figure which hasn't changed significantly since before the Occupy movement. So what's your answer to the question of pocketing and why? Give us a call. Our number is 233-88266. You can text 6393-5925 or you can email backchat@rthk.hk. That's backchat@rthk.hk with your questions and comments, or you can go to our Facebook page, Backchat and RTHK Radio 3, and comment there. After 9:20, we were going to be talking about sea sparkles on our seashore. Joining us for our first discussion in our central studio is David Webb, founder of website.com, and joining us on the line, Lee Chuck-Yan, legislator and chairman of the Labour Party, and Professor Michael DeGallia from the Department of Government and International Studies at the Baptist University, James Tin from the Liberal Party will also be joining us after 9 o'clock. David Webb, maybe we'll start with you. You're associated with this 2047 group.
I guess I am, yes. I attended their press conference last Monday.
Tell us a little bit about that.
I don't know much about it. It has a Facebook page. It's led by...
You're not one of the members, then?
Well, I'm not sure that it actually has any constitutional membership, but it's a group of like-minded people who care about the future of Hong Kong and are concerned about the impasse which will degrade the economy over time through the government policy-making or lack thereof.
Okay.
So the basic problem is that... So long as we have a paralysed government without an electoral mandate, it's only going to do easy things and not the difficult things that need to be done for the future of Hong Kong. And as long as the chief executive is pre-selected by tycoons in coalition with the Communist Party, then he's going to favour those vested interests on the committee rather than the broader interests of the market.
OK, and it's a group with a primarily business and finance... Interests
well, the bit I'm associated with is there's a subgroup called the HK 2047 Finance Monitor, but the panel session that we had at the FCC last Monday was quite a broad mix. It was me, Ed Chin, Ching Chong, the journalist, and Professor Sing Ming. Sorry, Ching Chong, the journalist come academic, the guy who was locked up in China for several years.
Yeah, former journalist, yeah. Mm.
Well, how do you plan to unparalyze the government, and how would your proposal be different from, say, the usual pan-democratic answer?
Well, I'm not proposing to paralyze the government. It's already paralyzed.
I mean, unparalyzed.
Sorry, unparalyzed. Well, if you have an electoral mandate, then you campaign on a manifesto. If you are chosen by the people to lead the government, you have 5 years to prove your policies correct based on what you said you would do in your manifesto.
And how is that different?
I think there's more acceptance of that system than one in which policies are thrust upon people by an unelected chief executive or one chosen by a narrow set of constituencies. So, and also, of course, that person should be able to be a member of a political party which might have a strong voice in LegCo so that they could work together, whereas at the moment there's a ban on the chief executive being a member of a party and continual deadlock with the legislative council.
So how is that different from the Pan Democrat Civic Party? Sounds like a similar or the same program.
How is what different?
How is what you just proposed different from the Pan Democrats? It sounds exactly the same type of proposal.
Oh, yes, we're all calling for...
Then why not join the Civic Party?
Proper democracy. Which one should I choose, Alex?
Well, I'm just wondering, why a new group when there's already so many
I don't think they are set up as a political party. They're not trying to move into that space. I would agree with you that there are too many, but that is rather a consequence of the electoral arithmetic of Hong Kong, which encourages small parties in a sort of divide and conquer strategy that the government cooked up some years ago. And as a result, we have many different pro-democracy parties all competing for mindshare to some extent. And not a single unified voice. And I think that has hampered their efforts over the years, but it's a structural problem. because of the way that we have up to 9 seats in a super constituency in the geographics, so you can be elected with 6 or 7% of the popular vote.
Mm-hmm. Lee Chuck-Yan, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Isn't it true, as the government says, that something is better than nothing? And if we don't get this something, we'll get nothing.
That was Hugo Swire, I think, who said that.
Yeah, but that something is not the real thing, in a way, and that's the problem. And I think
it's not perfect. No, it's not perfect, but it's better than nothing.
Yeah, but it's really worse than nothing, because in a way, you are having a system of so-called universal suffrage, and then the Chinese government then say, oh, it's a done deal. They can announce to the world that we have democracy and we have universal suffrage in Hong Kong, which is not true. And the worst part is when it's pre-selected by the Communist Party, the candidates, and then you vote. And when you vote in the candidate as the chief executive, he will be having, 1 million or more than 1 million, 2 million of votes. And then he can say, oh, I have the mandate of the people, which is not true. And that's the problem. He has a fake mandate. And the fake mandate that we give him or her, then he can justify it by, implementing his policy or implementing policy that said that he had that had a mandate of people that may hurt actually the people when we really don't have the choice. And then, of course, being pre-selected by the Communist Party, the future chief executive, of course, will be the yes man to Beijing, and there will be, no ground at all or no possibility at all for the Hong Kong to really defend one country, two system.
Yeah, okay.
And so this will be disastrous for Hong Kong when we have a fake mandate for the chief executive to do, damage to Hong Kong. And so we must not pocket such fake democracy, and Democrats already said we will vote down the package under the National People Congress, which have no possibility at all of having a real democracy.
You look around the world, then, you look how established democracies work, and you see that the nomination process is often extremely obscure. It's often to do with backroom deals. It's often to do with conferences and conventions and jockeying for position,
the
horse trading that goes on. Hang on, that goes on at those things. It's very murky. The thing is that you get candidates that emerge, and they take different roles. They take different stances, and they have to do that because they're in competition, and they're in competition for a public vote. So they distinguish themselves. So one will be more on one side, and one will be more on another side, and they will pull in different directions. And that, more than the actual person, more than the individual person, is what's significant. When you vote for the Democrat in America, you're voting for all the Democratic, all those principles that are espoused by the Democratic Party, and so on. So that, and that's the situation we'd have in Hong Kong under these proposals. The process is somewhat murky. To be honest, it's probably more transparent
than it is
when the Conservative Party, Party chooses their leader in the, God knows how that happens, in the UK, for example. But in the end, you get different candidates who have different positions, and surely that's what we would have.
In other places, it's party politics. You have the Democrats, the Republicans, the Labour and the Tories and Lib Dab, and they are the different parties. So you there's a transparency in knowing where the party are leading you to. But in Hong Kong, of course, you can say it's very transparent. It's completely dominated by the one party, the Communist Party. So there's no other way of no other choices. So one party dominated the Communist Party, but the worst part is, apart from dominated by the one party, the Communist Party, is also dominated by the tycoons and other vested interest group in Hong Kong that make up the you know, nomination committee.
Well, this happens everywhere. Japan has a one-party party politics, which dominate you know, the politics for half a century.
I know you're being disingenuous here. You know very well that that other countries don't have a central committee which screens candidates. Parties, of course, have to select their candidates for running, whether it's as an MP in a local constituency in a parliamentary democracy, or whether it's a candidate for president in the congressional system and presidential system that they have in the United States. But there are separate parties with separate policy platforms and manifestos that people get to choose from. Often it comes down to a two-party situation, again, because of the electoral arithmetic. If you don't have single transferable votes, then you tend to make it very difficult for third parties like the Liberal Party, Liberal Democrats in the UK, to get a foot in. But there is proper choice, and they don't have a national committee to screen all candidates for President of the United States. They don't have a national committee to screen all candidates for MP.
I guess what I'm saying is the significant choice, the choice comes in the campaigning. The choice comes because people assume different positions. They're in competition.
They assume any position they want to in that competition, whereas in Hong Kong the proposal is that only...
They want to get votes. They want to get the public vote because they need the public vote.
What you're saying is...
They need the votes of the nomination committee, so they have to be, you know, subjected to the Communist Party and also the
The point you're making is that after the...
Which has no meaning.
The point you're making is that after the undesirable candidates have been filtered out, then the remaining candidates, after passing through the nominating committee, would have to compete for the public vote. But they'll be having produced a set of proposals which was already acceptable to the members of the nominating committee and their vested interests. So you end up choosing between very, very similar-looking candidates rather than a broad spectrum of opinions and an open contest for ideas.
I think the criticisms that Ayan and David have voiced are well rehearsed, and I think that they're largely legitimate. But, we accept that. And so you take the position that's a fake democracy being proposed by the standing committee. So we should veto it. Okay, then we're back to the 2012 system, which has all the bad features that you guys just mentioned, along with the illegitimacy, a lack of mandate of the chosen CE. So we're back to that.
Yes. I mean, I recognize that.
Okay. So?
I recognize that.
How do we go forward?
There's no gain without pain, basically. And if you accept, I mean, it's a bit like being promised a Ferrari for Christmas and being given a toy Ferrari instead.
It's okay.
You've got the Ferrari now, you know.
I'll take the toy Ferrari.
It doesn't go very far, unfortunately.
Better than nothing.
And, you know, to use another metaphor, the problem with pocketing this proposal is it's like used chewing gum. It's sticky and will take ages to get out. We need to
have... That's why it's banned in Singapore.
Yeah, that's probably right. Gets all over the streets as well, like we would. So the problem is, if we pocket this fake democracy, the government here and in Beijing will then say, there you are, you've got universal suffrage, we promised you would get it, it's all done now, and that's the end of it. And all of these indications and nuances that people like Jasper Zhang tries to produce on TV, saying, well, there are some people who have said that maybe there could be some more progress in 2022, this is all just hogwash. There's no concrete commitments in that direction. I mean, if the NPC were to say, actually, we are promising you a two-step process, we're going to give you a 50% threshold in the nominating committee in 2017 and a 12.5% threshold like we had last time in 2012. That will be reintroduced in 2022. I think then people could say, well, actually, now you're starting to talk. Now you're starting to produce a system which nominated pan-democratic candidates in the last two elections. But there's no commitment in that direction at all. So we're being asked to pocket our toy Ferrari and never have a real one.
Okay. Michael DeGolia from the Baptist University is also on the line. Professor DeGolia, good morning to you.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us. A new poll commissioned by the South China Morning Post, as I mentioned in the introduction, publicised on the front page of the newspaper today, showing that a plurality, we should reject the proposal. That's 45 to 41. What do you make of that? And that's a figure unchanged since before Occupy. Does that tally with your findings and the sort of general mood, do you feel?
Well, I think if you back out the folks who say don't know or hard to say, most of whom are older and less educated, and this is typical of the kind of responses that that group has always given on these kinds of issues, issues that they see as more abstract, remote, and difficult to understand, you get roughly a 48-52 breakdown, 52% against it, saying reject it, roughly 48% saying yes, pass it, of those who have an opinion, okay, once you take out the don't knows are hard to say. The 52% is fairly close to what the Democrats have been getting. They get between 53 and 54% of the LegCo electoral vote, 54% just right around that, just under it in the last election. That's been drifting down over the last few years. It's hard to say from this survey whether or not this indicates that there's been some weakening in support for the pan-Democrats as a whole in things like the LegCo election, and I think that's the crucial issue at hand right here, because the key aspect the whole pan-democratic movement has in terms of its legitimacy is that it has consistently produced a majority of the votes while it has received a minority of the seats. And that's a crucial component of their whole claim that the system is biased against them and is also unrepresentative and undemocratic. So it looks like they're holding pretty close to what they have held for the last several years.
This result was conducted after the Occupy protest. There was a similar SCMP survey conducted before the protest, and the numbers were roughly similar. Does it mean that people's minds have already been made up? The Occupy didn't really swing one way or the other.
Well, the thing about the effect of Occupy Central has been to stiffen the pro-government side far more than to do anything for the pan-Democrats at all. Hasn't added anything to their numbers. They've not grown in public support whatsoever. And what had been kind of lukewarm feelings about the whole political system, per se, have now really become much stronger on the pro-government side. And we have certainly seen a change in tone in the CY Leung government, having survived Occupy Central. So the only thing it's really achieved, I think, is not adding to the pan-democratic side, but certainly hardening the position of the pro-government side.
So it's been somewhat counterproductive for the pan-democrats in a way.
Well, yes, in that sense, because, I mean, the key thing is getting people to, for example, turn out at the polls. This is a real problem that more liberal parties around the world have. In the United States, for example, it's notoriously hard to get Democrats, Democratic voters, to show up in non-presidential election years. And so what we have here, I think, is going to be an even stronger penchant for the pro-government side to get its voters to the polls. The real worrying thing is whether or not the Democrats get discouraged over the whole thing.
Professor DeGolli, you are pro-pocket, is that right?
No, not given this second round, given some of the things that they've said. At the moment, I think unless there's a commitment to carry forward for further reform, just as David was saying, that it's definitely not worth pocketing.
If the government really believe what they're saying, that the pan-democrats are preventing 5 million people from voting in universal suffrage in 2017, then they're standing in the way of that, then they should take it to the people through a referendum and say to the people, do you want to pocket this proposal, yes or no? The government can conduct local referendums just by passing a bill to do that. But it won't do that, of course, because it knows that the majority vote of people who have an opinion would be against pocketing this proposal as it stands. And one thing that disappoints me is the way that the government tries to connect the NPC decision to what it could do locally in reforming the functional constituencies in terms of broadening their electorates and also reforming, consequently, the subsector elections for the election committee, because that could be done even after the NPC decision has been voted down. The government could say, actually, these were two separate issues. We tried to connect them to kind of ransom you into approving the NPC decision, but now that you've rejected the NPC decision, let's see what we can do to broaden the FC vote back to the way it was in 1996, when every person who worked had a vote in each of the professional constituencies, and then pave the way for their abolition later. Rather than just saying, right, that's it, we're taking our toys and going back to our bedroom. You know,
I think the key thing that's missing for me is this commitment to further reform after 2017. If we were to pocket this, is there going to be any commitment to further change in future? And right now, that's the crucial thing that's missing.
Lee Chuck-Yan,
is the problem. You know,
what if there was a commitment? What if there was that commitment? Would you then support it?
You know, I don't think we can just take a commitment. You know, the problem with the previous discussion in the past, I mean, when we don't have any promise on real democracy, is that we don't have a timetable and a roadmap. And then when we have that, it's not real, and it comes to be a fake proposal of democracy. So if this time we pocket it without, and they say that, oh, you will have improvement in the past, you know, firstly, can we trust them? Do you trust them? You know, I would ask the people of Hong Kong. You know, we have been, you know, you can say delayed it, and then finally when we have the rich 2017 discussion, oh, it turned out to be a fake proposal, you know, imposed on us by National People Congress. So can we trust them that in the next round the improvement is genuine and is the improvement is really from that can be acceptable.
No, you can't trust them, but
all they're concerned about is national security.
Well, I would say trust but verify. If it was in black and white decision from the NPCSC saying the threshold in 2022 will be 12.5%, I would take their word for that, because they do tend to, once they're in black and white, they'll stick to it. What they don't like doing is putting things in black and white.
But
they are not going to put anything on black and white. And what we are saying is that unless you give us a whole package, I mean, we have talked about one-off legislative package, you know, to have a one-off legislative proposal that would determine 2017, 2020, 2020, and 2012. You know, one-off. Everything, you know, set down black and white in a legislative form, you know, and then we are settled that the future, the package will be a real democracy. So, but that would not happen, because every time the Communist Party will tell you that, oh, pocket this first and then we will have further improvement, and if you are a good boy and you pocket it, then we will be kind to you and good to you, and then you will have real democracy in the future.
But if your I don't understand your logic, or David, if your strategy is for the long game anyway to fight them, well, okay, you veto it, you fight the 2012 system, or you accept this, and then you fight this system, you're going to play the long game and you're going to fight anyway. So what? Why not get a little bit of get the vote first, and then you continue the fight? I mean, if you're going to fight anyway. If you won't,
because
if
it relieves.
If you can't accept,
if you accept this package, then you know,
you don't accept it, but you make a decision. You let it pass, and then you say this is a very imperfect proposal, and we will continue to fight. But we'll pocket these 3.4 million votes, people who actually vote first, and then you continue to fight. You know, why not? If your argument is valid, then sell it to even that is not a sufficient mandate. We need a better real mandate. Continue to fight. Why not do that?
If you said that you continue to fight even after you pocket this, then you know the spirit of fight is not there. You know, you are willing to accept a fake one. So then they will keep on feeding you fake one. Okay, in the year 2020, Legislative Council, the nomination will be by...
Well, you still get a fake one in the 2012, which is even faker.
You have already accepted that, so you should accept this. And you are always asked to pocket force fake democracy, one time after another time, and you will not get what you want.
They've set, they've
so
set the bar.
I think the spirit is very important.
Yeah. There's not enough on the table to make it worth eating. That's the problem.
Okay, Michael DeGolis, sorry, we've just got to... in 30 seconds, you were, I think, pro-pocket previously, and now you've changed your mind. That's because you don't see the commitment, you don't see any wiggle room, you don't see any developments in the second stage of consultations. Is that right?
Before the second consultation document came out, the government was talking more along the lines of supporting
we could
the
think
idea
about,
of
yeah.
further progress
okay.
and commitment to further progress. And that's the crucial leverage that has to be there. It's currently not there. Once it's pocketed, there's no promise whatsoever that there will be any further progress on the chief executive election.
Mm. Okay.
And that's the crucial missing thing.
All right. Well,
then there will be zero progress if you go back to 2012.
But there's no further progress.
Then there's no progress one way or another, I guess.
Well, then the pressure will be on for a proper system in 2022.
All right, well, we're going to continue talking about the political reform package, pocketing or vetoing, after the news at 9 o'clock. We hope to be joined also by James Tin. Welcome back. This is Bank Chat on a Tuesday morning with Alex Lowe and me, Hugh Chiverton, as your hosts. We're talking about the political reform package. Should we pocket it? All the big names in Hong Kong politics were wheeled out. That's the chief secretary, the chief executive, the leader of the executive council, convener of the executive council, the president of LegCo at the weekend to urge people to support the package. But it doesn't seem as if the Pan Democrats are listening to them, and it seems that polls suggest that the public agree with the Pan Democrats, at least, on this issue. We have, talking about pocketing or not pocketing the proposal, Michael DeGolis, Professor DeGolis from the Department of Government and International Studies at the Baptist University, Lee Chuck Yan, who's a legislator and chairman of the Labour Party, David Webb, who's the founder of website.com, a shareholder activist, and also joining us on the line now is James Tin, who's a legislator with the Liberal Party. Later we're also going to be talking about sea sparkle, that marine phenomenon you might have noticed in our waters of late. Our email, backchat@rthk.hk, that's backchat@rthk.hk. James Tin, good morning to you. Thanks,
good morning.
Thanks for joining us today. This second round of proposals, we were hearing earlier from Professor Michael DeGolis, who I think in the first round was saying, yeah, pocket, and now he's saying, no, don't pocket, basically because of the increased inflexibility of the administration, of the government in this second round. What's the argument, you think, for pocketing?
Well, I think if you look at the current design of the political reform package, of course it's not perfect. But on the other hand, I really think the Hong Kong people, we have to sort it out and decide it for ourselves. Because if we used to cite examples from around the world, there's no real example that we could cite that's exactly sort of close to what Hong Kong is. Under one country, there's two systems, which means under the mini-constitution, under the country's constitution. Now, to be frank, under the current concept of one country, two system, we're not independent. So if we're not independent, then China must have a say on certain things. If they're not having a say on our livelihood issues, like, I don't know, education, housing, or traffic, or have a strong say on economic things, like what we should do.
Okay, but they do appoint, that's the last stage, isn't it? They appoint the chief executive, so there's their say.
Yes. A lot of people use that argument, but I don't think that's viable, because that's the last thing Beijing would want to do, and that's the last thing Hong Kong would do. Now imagine the pandemic chooses, and they say, no, I will not appoint her. By appoint a second in line, who's got like 30% vote versus the other one getting 60% vote. Then how can that chief executive govern? It will be worse than CY Leung. CY was already in terrible shape now, because he doesn't have a mandate. But if we choose another candidate, like you suggested, not appoint the one that people choose, but appoint the second one, then I think Hong Kong will be even more ungovernable. But let's go back to the current form, whether we should pocket it or not. My main reason for pocketing it is, I think, we whether C.Y. Leung can get another second term. Well, let the decision be with the people. Now, if he runs for it, there's at least two other sort of candidates. Unless those two candidates are worse than C.Y., then maybe there's a chance. But if we let the current election form stay, which means the 1,200 people, Beijing can easily decide let C.Y. have a second 5 years. And I think C.Y. is doing a terrible job right now. He's not talking to the pandems. He's not talking to the students. The Legislative Council, which I and Mr. Lee Chia is sitting in, simply aren't functioning. So my message to Mr. Lee is that every time the pandemic is against CY from even governing now, so they want to make sure he doesn't govern for another 5 years.
So we should pocket it just to get rid of CY Leung.
And just then vote him out by the people.
Well,
I know you called on him
to resign, but that can't be the reason to adopt a crappy system, can it? I mean,
no. The cracky system is not that cracky compared to the current one, because the 3.4 million people that vote, or rather 5 million, will have a say. So that's less cracky than the current system, where only 1,200 people, basically...
Well, all the people of North Korea have a say as well, but they have to vote. There's only one candidate. So,
well,
you know, is that a universal suffrage model?
We're a little bit better than North Korea, however you can.
Okay, then all the people of Iran have a say, but only after the Ayatollahs have had their say over who the candidates should be. I mean, is that a good system?
But they had a good election, until they signed in the troops.
Everybody have a say, like in Thailand or Egypt. The 49 that loses versus the 51 decide not to agree.
I'm not proposing a military coup.
Another riot. So even though you have a fair say, the 50-50 split in modern democracy.
Thailand and Egypt are both under military government right now, as you know. But but your argument basically is let's get CY out.
Let the people get CY out, and not let Beijing make him stay. Now this is only two versions.
But you mentioned
the 1,200 Beijing
Hong Kong
could make him stay.
You mentioned that Hong Kong isn't independent.
4 million people voting, the people will make him up.
You mentioned that Hong Kong isn't independent, James, but everyone understands that, and nor is New York State independent of the United States, but it does get to choose its own governor.
But New York doesn't have a constitution. They don't have a comparable basic...
New York State has its own constitution. New York State has its own Congress, like all the other 50 states, other 49 states, and it does choose its own governor, who doesn't have to be approved by the United States, but it's still part of the one country. Why can't Hong Kong have its high degree of autonomy and choose on its own its leader and still be part of one country?
Because it does have to be approved.
They can still have the appointment at the end. They still have that constitutional veto right over the chosen person.
But that's what the Constitution says.
And it's there for a reason. It wasn't just written in for the sake of it. It gives...
But I agree with James Dean that that's a thermonuclear option, and you don't launch a thermonuclear war because you hurt everyone, including yourself. So that... But Beijing clearly wants to engineer an election such that it would never have to exercise that option.
Well, it may be similar to the Queen asking.
You say that, but there's a strange emphasis in the consultation document that was published last month. 2017 sees the opportunity. I don't know if anyone else. I think I've mentioned this before on the program. It's paragraph 611. Where it says four times a candidate returned by election can become the CE only after being appointed by the CPG. And this is a mandatory procedure prescribed by law. The power of appointment reflects the sovereignty of the state. The appointment of the CE by the CPG under the law is not a mere formality, but a substantive appointment. The CPG has the power to appoint or not to appoint. It's saying this again and again and again and again.
Yeah, they think it's meaningful.
I'm not quite sure why they're doing that. What's the point?
The reason I think they mentioned that is that's something exactly they don't want to do. So they're warning people, you better do it the way that I could appoint someone.
So
and
that
not
they can pretend that it's someone that we've chosen.
The reason for that paragraph is that they want to affirm the power of the CPG. And actually, they have all the power now. You know, they have the power to pre-select the candidate for sure. You know, everyone knows that the nomination committee will only nominate accordance to the
But does that imply they have
all the power, but then they still have to make... have that, you know, the power to, you know, dismiss.
It's funny because are you saying that implies that you've got to make a recommendation which they will agree with?
Yeah, of course. They are worried to the extent that, you know, if someone naughty go in and become a sort of undercover, and then suddenly become naughty, then they can, you know, sack them. So this is the kind of you know, power they want to exercise.
Well, they have anyway.
You know, they want to have, you know, zero risk in that sense.
Yeah, no, I think they could do that anyway.
All right, so some comments from listeners. Thank you very much. Our email is backchat@rthk.hk. That's backchat@rthk.hk. A couple from Henry, first of all. He says, poll results change. If people in Hong Kong continue to fight against each other in their political ideals, then all, including those opposing, will suffer. The Chinese saying people in the same boat should help each other. So we should all work together to make Hong Kong a success. Past Hong Kong history, including the British administration, shows the philosophy press on and go ahead works. The main point for the Pan Democrats is they want to seize power, and if they see no way, they would object to the very end and say it's fake universal suffrage. That is tantamount to a determination to seize power. Plus the background that a lot of Pan Democrat members vow to end one-party rule in China, so national security is a paramount consideration. If we pocket first, at least we progress. If we don't, then the answer lies in what one would feel if one is in the seat of a Chinese leader, and take a national perspective plus a national security element. Henry also says we have to be careful about asking for black and white commitment for future changes. Given the unpredictability of future political scene, I don't think any political leader of any country would give a detailed map of the future. The national security issue this time is an example. Says Henry. Thank you much.
Well, he's mentioned national security about five times in that email, Henry, and also you've conflated that with the issue of the one-party state. These are two different things. We can have national security in a multi-party system as well. It's quite clear that, and also he says that the Democrats want to seize power. No, actually, they want the right to be elected. That's all. If the people choose to elect somebody who is not seen as a pan-democrat, that's also fine, but they want a fair chance. We're the only global financial centre that doesn't get to choose its own leader. Greater London chose Boris Johnson as their mayor, and New York City chose Mr. de Blasio as their mayor. Why can't we choose ours? That's the basic question. It's not a question of undermining the state.
Because those regimes are democratic, whereas in China you don't have a democratic system.
Well, there you are.
There it is. That's the reality. Where are the political realists? There are a lot of idealists here, but where are the
realists? Deng Xiaoping said it's okay for some people to get rich first.
But also, examples you cited, either London or the New York State, whoever that's elected, they will not say down with sort of the party that's ruling. But this is what Hong Kong, some of us are saying, the pandems. That's why Beijing have a problem.
Well, yes, I mean, you can certainly have a Republican mayor of New York and a Democratic president, so they can say down with the party that's ruling, yes. He's not saying down with the country. It's a question of down with the party. That's a very different thing. But the reality is, I think, the people of Hong Kong would not elect
China. China is equal to down with the Communist Party.
The reality is that the party also equates itself with the state, which is very different from
they are
the
two
Western
different things.
In the Western conception, yes, but for the party's sake, they equate themselves as the state, like it or not.
But
they have the power to impose their equations.
And they are.
You can ideologically oppose and then come over and throw them with the Federalist Papers. And John Long, no, they're two different things, but as far as the people who have the levers of power, yes, they're the same.
Hong Kong.
There are certain realities that have to take into consideration.
Economically and socially, Hong Kong is very interlinked with China, and the reality is that the people here will not elect someone who's going to break that link. They'll elect someone who will stand up because he or she has been an obligation to stand up and represent Hong Kong's interests within the country. But it's not going to be someone who is opposed to the country. And they're going to have to work with whatever government is in China at the time. So I think these concerns about national security are grossly misleading.
Li Chang-Yan, are you trying to seize power? After all, you seem to be insisting on a method where you would have a chance of putting a candidate in your particular political grouping. That seems to be your main idea.
Yeah, the idea is to let the people, you know, have a say. You know, if a majority of the people want to choose a pan-democrat or don't want to choose a pan-democrat, that's democracy. And everyone should have the equal chance to be elected, to stand as a candidate. And it's absurd that, you know, when the pan-democrat had always in the past had a majority of the vote, they cannot stand as candidate. And that is not democracy for sure.
But you can stand as candidate.
But at least Democracy means that the people have a choice.
Yes, but the reality is that if the nominating committee was broadly representative, and CY has already said that can't happen because too many people are below 14,000 a month, but you know, if they were a random sample of the population, then it would be unfair to pro-Beijing candidates that they would need a 50% threshold before they could run for public election. There has to be a much lower threshold in order to have a proper open election, whether your politics are pro-Beijing or pro-democracy or pro-free lunches. There needs to be a threshold that's much lower in that committee. So if you then have a fair committee, it's not going to prevent pro-Beijing candidates from running.
Committee or not, the 1,200 has nothing to do with the 14,000 below income group. If you look at the four main groupings, I think the mainland really will have sort of influence, or rather heavy influence, over 600. So they make sure that you need pass 600, the pandemic.
No, I'm just saying.
I agree with that.
I'm just postulating were representative.
It's not a lot of engineers or other social worker that's pro-Beijing.
James, you're right. It's not a representative committee.
Mathematics. You know, 1/4 of the nominee committee is for the business sector, so for sure they are over 14K.
Well, you think all the labor unions, on your group, will support you? No, there's so many ones from CTU, right? They will certainly not support anyone from the pandems.
Yeah, of course, the society. I'm not saying that all the workers support me, but at least, you know, in a democracy, you know, where everyone have an equal right to be nominated, then it would not be should not be dominated by the
business
sector.
That's why I say one country, two system is not the democracy we are comparing with Western sort of democracy. Is something that we really have to sort it out among Hong Kong people. There's nothing in the world that's comparable to this. But
just one point
I think I want to comment. The mainland officials, I think, would like to have a chief executive at, let's say, the crux of the moment, supports Beijing and not Hong Kong. But if you look at it, somehow it makes sense. Let's say the mayor of Shanghai. The way Beijing looks at it, at the crux of the moment, the mayor of Shanghai better support Beijing. The mayor of Beijing better support central government. The mayor of Guangzhou, the same thing. Because if all the mayors sort of at the crux of the moment support their own city and not the central government, then it's pretty hard to run China.
That's absolute nonsense. That's absolute nonsense. You can run a country with 50...
become another China city.
You can run a country with 50 different states, each electing their own leadership. Surely...
No, it's quite not quite true. All the Beijing, the Shanghai mayors, blah, blah, blah. I'm sure they're all Communist Party members. They're part of the institution, the Communist Party. But in our case, certainly they said no, Communist Party members will not be running in Hong Kong. And that's a blessing for us.
But they are the underground party member then.
Well,
you know,
difficult
we don't
to
know
define
actually
underground
what
people.
The real identity
they all argue that you might be underground influenced by overseas countries. So that's whenever you say they're underground, it's probably difficult to argue.
Anyway,
I think the main point that we're talking about pocket or not is that it's much better than the current system. Let's get away from the personal attack on CY or not. Let the people, the 5 million. Have a choice. Unless you say there's only one choice, which I don't think will be the case. If there's three choices, unless they could come up with three CY loans for you to choose.
That's basically what will happen.
So then the other thing is it's better than the 1,200 people, which basically Beijing have a choice. Look at what happened the last minute between Henry Tan and CY. All of a sudden, CY gets 689 votes. You guys don't like that.
You yourself have a personal experience. You know, I want to choose you, say, but you are sacked by the Communist Party.
No, I don't.
You know,
so that's my problem, but I didn't vote for CY.
CPCC.
Well, so I didn't vote for CY.
If we want a real choice, you know, say you, we cannot have that because the Communist Party don't like you.
Well,
the real choice could not be Li Qiaoyang.
At least he's got the same initials. He won't have to change the notepaper at Government House.
Well, there's an advantage.
Yeah, LCY.
All right.
Here's an email from Bowen. Thank you very much indeed. Our address, backchat@rthk.hk. Under the subject line, to pocket or not to pocket is the question. Bowen says, what Hugh was going on about at the start of the programme, I think that was about the nomination procedures in established democracies is only part of what goes on in the established democracies. First, there are almost always more than one viable political parties which can come up with candidates and policies of really varying kinds. Under the proposed package, candidates who get let into the main open vote will all have to adopt platforms acceptable by the authorities and will likely have to alter their policies even after elected if the authorities do not give them the green light. Second, even outside of the mainstream political parties, what happens in reality in the established democracies is that sometimes there are significant individuals like Ross Perot in the United States who are able to run independent campaigns and achieve real effects on the positions of the mainstream political parties. Third, what Alex said about the Hong Kong going back to the same position in 2012 if the MPCSC package is vetoed is untrue in a very significant way. I, being elected by 1,200 people, see why I could never claim to have much legitimacy. Imagine what he would hype himself up to be if he was elected in an open vote with only Henry Tang standing as the other candidate. In a word, no useful service is served under the package other than giving the elected candidate full legitimacy to pursue directions that people don't want, which is a very dangerous prospect, says Bowen. Thank you very much indeed for that comment, Bowen. Michael DeGolli, are you still there?
Yes.
What about that point, that this adds an unjustified legitimacy to the person that CY or whoever it is would be able to claim that they're elected, that they have a mandate and they don't really have a mandate?
That's another reason why the crucial factor for me is the lack of commitment for further reform. I also find it troubling in the document that there's no commitment, for example, to secret balloting. They talk whether open or secret balloting should be adopted. Of course, it should be secret balloting, particularly.
But right now, it is secret balloting for the 1,200 members.
But this is raised in the consultation document as to whether this should be.
Oh, it was last time already, so I don't think they can backtrack on the secret balloting.
Well, that's
1,200 electors.
And that's why I'm a little surprised to see it in the document, not once but twice. So, you know, the second consultation procedure is certainly far more conservative. There's no commitment to going forward, even if it is pocketed. And I think those are crucial flaws.
James Tin, do you think there's... Because, I mean, the document just doesn't mention some things. It doesn't mention the veto, whether that's a mention of timing or not, you know, the Albert Chen's proposal. Do you think there is much scope for these other things, like some kind of more concrete commitment to future reform, like introducing the veto, like some commitment on corporate voting?
Well, right now is the stage of the public consultation. If they brought this up, which, thank you to Michael, I didn't actually haven't noticed that point. Liberal Party, we will certainly put in our view. So if more people put in more views, like whether the ballot should be secret or not, we would certainly argue in the past few rounds it wasn't secret already. How could it be a secret ballot again now? It's actually backtracking on the whole system. So I think eventually government will go back to the original way, which is not this one. But on the future commitment, Michael, I think there's a problem because the MPC Standing Committee, they are elected every 5 years. So the current MPC Standing Committee cannot commit for the Standing Committee 5 years down the road about giving Hong Kong more progress, even if they're willing to, which I don't really think they want. But all the years in the past 17 years, they try to make some progression every now and then. From what my understanding is, which I don't think is likely, is their hoping of progression is one day Lee Chiang will come out and say, I support the Communist Party, I left the country, I'm no longer the old Lee Chiang, then would you let me run? Well, that's an unlikely scenario. But for China to change their view by saying that even Lee Chiang can run, I don't think that will happen, even in the ultimate package.
But can you
imagine?
I don't
think I'm the one that really want to run. I want to try and continue to, you know, fight for democracy. But,
I wish the Democrats would want to run and would want to take power. A lot of them don't seem to want to do it. Yeah. And so they don't behave like professional politicians. I really wish they would just want to seize power.
Yeah, what I'm talking about is not a commitment to make it so that people like Lee Chuk-yan could run, and particularly public nomination. Not at all. It's a commitment just to further reform. For example, I'm very dubious as to whether we're going to get rid of corporate voting in the nominating committee. And the nominating committee is currently comprised is wildly unrepresentative.
I agree with David.
Certainly
even
needs
we put in that point as well. We should change it not to all the workers of that let's say Hong Kong Shanghai Bank, but at least the senior management, which would at least bring the vote from one to like
not level. The workers. So no, that, certainly that, not James. No. Can't have the workers
that,
voting,
know,
can we?
Only the 40K above can you know have a say in Hong Kong. But coming back, you know, I think on the consultation paper, that's one point, is that even it's so narrow that the consideration of reducing some of the numbers of the within the groupings are not possible. Because
let's be clear again. The government,
the consensus of that particular grouping.
Yes. The way
if
in
you
which
you want to reduce the fishery, which had already now strangely 60 seats, it's difficult because Carrie Lam said that you need their political concession, which is not easy then. Then
but so let's be clear, the distribution of votes, the distribution of seats within the four sectors is a matter for local legislation, and the way in which those seats are elected, whether by corporate or individual votes, is also a matter for local legislation that the government could pursue even after the NPC decision is voted down. The second point I want to make before we close is that if the NPC decision is voted down, I think it's incredibly unlikely that in 2022, in advance of that, they will say, here you are, it's what we offered you last time, take it or leave it. They will have to come up with something better, and that's the reason not to pocket this proposal. They will have to put forward something that is more credible.
They would have to.
That's part of any negotiation. Not going to say, here's the thing you rejected last time, will you approve it this time? It's just very unlikely that they would stick to that line.
Okay, we're going to have to cut it off there.
They won't come up with another package in 2020.
James Tint, sorry. Okay. Another discussion another time. I'm sure there will be other discussions at other times.
Thank you.
With the Liberal Party. Thanks to Michael DeGolli from Baptist University, Lee Chuck-Yan from the Labour Party, and David Webb from website.com. Thank you all very much.